Welcome to another edition of the Joe Polish Superstar Interview Series. In just a moment, Joe Polish and special guest Jeff Smith will be interviewing the master of money, investing guru, and best-selling author of the phenomenal book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki. If you would like additional information on how to receive more educational interviews with the most successful marketing and business building experts in the world, where they reveal their wealth building secrets with you, then call the Piranha Support Team or go to www.joepolish.com. And now, here's a little bit of info about Robert. Robert Kiyosaki is the author of the phenomenal best-selling book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, as well as three other international bestsellers focusing on what the rich teach their children about money that the poor and middle class do not. Born and raised in Hawaii, Robert is a fourth-generation Japanese-American. He comes from a prominent family of educators, his father being the head of education for the state of Hawaii. After high school, Robert was educated in New York, and upon graduation, he joined the U.S. Marine Corps and went to Vietnam as an officer and a helicopter gunship pilot. Returning from the war, Robert's business career began. In 1977, he founded a company that brought to the market the first nylon and Velcro surfer wallets, which grew into a multi-million dollar worldwide product. Additionally, in 1985, he co-founded an international education company that operated in seven countries, teaching business and investing to tens of thousands of graduates. He also had a television show on the Nostalgia Network, carrying his educational message all across America. Retiring at age 47, Robert now does what he loves best, investing. Concerned about the growing gap between the haves and the have-nots, Robert created the game board Cashflow, which teaches the game of money, before now known only by the rich. Although Robert's business is real estate and developing small-cap companies, his true love and passion is teaching. He conducts classes that last anywhere from 1 hour to 3 days, teaching people how to become wealthy. Robert has shared the speaking stage with such greats as Og Mandino, Zig Ziglar, and Anthony Robbins. His subjects run from investing for high returns and low risk, to teaching your children to be rich, to starting companies and selling them. He's also been featured on television with giants such as Oprah Winfrey. Robert's message is clear. Take responsibility for your finances or take orders all your life. You're either a master of money or a slave to it. And now, let's join Joe Polish, president of Piranha Marketing, and special guest Jeff Smith as they interview the master of money, investing guru, and best-selling author Robert Kiyosaki on how to awaken your financial genius.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Polish. Welcome to another wonderful interview. Today, I have got an interview that many people have requested that I do. I know you're going to get a lot of value out of this. I'm sitting across the table with Mr. Robert Kiyosaki, the author of the mega bestseller Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which many of you as my listeners have read because of all the recommendations throughout the last couple of years to read this book. I've also invited a very special guest of mine, which many of you know, Mr. Jeff Smith, author of Stress-Free Success. And I've invited Jeff in on this interview because during our coaching club calls that we've done with our mastermind coaching program, Jeff, over the last few months, has done an enormous amount of teaching and training on financial management and how to actually create wealth. And he is quite knowledgeable in this area, so I thought it would be very beneficial to invite Jeff in. So hello, Jeff.
Thank you, Joe.
And hello, Robert.
Hello, hello.
Okay, we're all in Arizona today. The weather's great, and we're going to give you guys some great information that hopefully will revolutionize not only your income, but also your lives. You've heard a little bit of information about Robert in the beginning of this tape, but Robert, give us some background about what you're pretty much doing now and how many books you've sold and a little bit of information about your background.
Well, some of you know I was born in Hawaii, a fourth generation Japanese American, and my father was the head of education in the state of Hawaii, but he was my poor dad simply because he had what I would call poor attitude towards money. He was basically a socialist. And he thought that capitalists were cruel, inhumane people. Whereas my rich dad was my best friend's father, who was a man who started with nothing, flunked out of school. He actually dropped out of school at age 13 because his dad died. He had to take over the business. He ultimately became one of the wealthiest men in the state of Hawaii. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad was simply a true story about what two fathers tell their two sons, my best friend and I, about the subject of money. And it started at the age of 9. And it was the advice of both these dads were almost the polarity or the oppositeness of the advice that kind of messed me up for a number of years because, you know, you go to school, get good grades so you can get a safe, secure job and climb the corporate ladder. Well, one dad, my poor dad, thinks that is just a whippersnapper smart idea. And my rich dad says, that's a stupid idea. And so if you may imagine being, you know, 9-10-year-old kid going, huh? And having that polarity and not really knowing who to listen to. The difference was when I retired at age 47 and with my wife, she was only 37 at the time, we were financially free for the rest of our lives. And when people say, well, money doesn't buy you happiness, well, that's quite true. I've had money, I don't have money, and I'm still happy. If you're not happy with or without money, you're not going to be happy anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing that money does buy you is free time. And I think that is probably the most priceless of all things. You figure you're going to retire at age 65 in the general scheme. My wife retiring at 37 basically bought herself 28 years of life of freedom. Now, what's that worth? Now, to me, that's priceless.
Absolutely.
Absolutely priceless. And the worst thing about it was we went right back to work after a year of taking it off because we said, well, we kind of enjoy being entrepreneurs and building companies and buying real estate and building small cap companies and playing the markets and all this. But at least we had the choice of stopping or starting again. But we did take that year, year and a half off to find out. In that year and a half off, I was living in Bisbee, Arizona, on top of a mountain. I had my ranch, and I was just sitting out there, you know, doing nothing, trying to figure out what's the meaning of life.
Right.
You know, I had health, I had youth, I had cash, I have a great marriage, I have money, you know, I had friends. Health and, you know, happiness are probably the best, but cash does help. You know? But cash I didn't have to work for. It just came in every single month like a clock. So I sat there and I go, what's the meaning of life? And when I left it, I still really didn't have an answer, but what I did have was a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, a little Mac computer, because my little ranch out in the mountains is a little valley, tall oak trees, running stream, Bambi running by in a mountain lion chasing Bambi every morning, you know, I'd watch all that. There was a telephone, but there was no radio and no television. So I sit by my fire and crank away on my little Mac computer. And it was a story. I just wanted to have a leave behind. You know, leave a trail for anybody who might be interested of how I got here. And then I was free to move on with the rest of my life. But at least I left a document or some kind of paper trail for anybody who might want to find out how you start with nothing and how you become financially free at a relatively early age. That's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
That was your inspiration to write it, was wanting to leave that?
Yeah, I'm more like my poor dad. Genetically, I'm more a socialist, you know what I mean? And I had to learn to be a capitalist because my poor dad was with the Peace Corps and all those other, you know, and they're very feel-good organizations that do a lot of good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I really did come in the quiet of the mountainside, sitting by my fire, cranking away on my Mac computer. I realized that genetically I'm more of a teacher, not a capitalist like my rich dad. Got to be true to who you are. The reason I teach today is not because I need to teach, I need the money. I teach because if I didn't teach, I'd die. So sitting in the mountains for about a year, year and a half, after I built a cabin up there, and it was really wonderful, that song, Is That All There Is to Life? And when I came out, I said, you know, I've trained to do certain things. I build companies. I take them public. I buy real estate. That's what I do really well. That's what I was trained to do. But I still needed to write this book, which was the core, the mission in me. And so the thing I still do is I'm more of a teacher. And the reason I write my books and I go on the road and do seminars, you know, I'm very happy to talk to Jeff and Joe because the two of you are also teachers also. If you look at what your core drive is, if you didn't teach, you know, I think there's a part of your life that would be empty. Is that true?
Absolutely.
It would be very empty.
Yeah.
And the thing I found out was not everybody wants to be rich. People dream of being rich. But very few people will do anything about being rich. And I found that it was very best to talk to only people who are willing to do something about being rich. And that's why I was willing to come in and yak on this tape with you guys, because you guys are both doers, you're teachers, and you're teaching people who are actually doing something about becoming rich. If I talked to the National Education Association, you know, the teachers' union, there would be a second crucifixion up there, you know, because my ideas would not fit their ideas. And this is a big country, it's a free country, and you're entitled to your own ideas. So what I decided to do was just teach those who are wanting to learn. And that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I actually created the board game Cash Flow first, because I am not a good student. I am a doer. You know, I learn by doing. So cash flow is a game that teaches people to do mentally, emotionally, and physically. School generally is a mental process.
Right.
And after kindergarten, they took the blocks away from me. I was downhill in school after that. You know, where's the blocks? I can't learn anything. I said, well, just sit here and memorize what I say to you. Oh, and I jumped out the window. I can't stand that kind of learning. So anyway, that's why I created board games, because I learned to be rich playing Monopoly. And we all know the formula for great wealth on Monopoly. I was 9 years old. Four greenhouses, red hotel. Four greenhouses, 1031 tax-free exchange, red hotel. I mean, that is the formula. That's all I needed to know. So by the time I was 10 years old with my rich dad, I was completely messed up. Because when the teacher said to me, you know, Robert, you have bad grades. And if you have bad grades, you'll never get a job and you won't be a good employee. I said, oh, good, I'm on the right track. You know? Because I don't want a job. Yeah, I don't want a job. I don't want to be an employee. And I want to work till 65.
Yeah.
So my value systems were very different than the value systems of many kids in school. And I was kind of an oddball reject surfer playing football. I mean, that was my whole life. The one thing about my rich dad, I knew at age 10 I was going to be rich. I knew. I didn't know how, but I knew. And I think that's very important. It's a part of your soul, your spirit, your being. You've got to know it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You've got to know it. So that's what I do now. I speak to those who know it and who want to get there. So I'm very happy to be here. I'm honored to speak to you guys. I've known Joe for years. I see him all the time. And we always recognize fellow teachers like Dan Kennedy. I recognize him. That boy's a teacher. He can't help himself. When he's 99 years old, he'll still be pitching his deals. And you guys will still be doing what you're doing because that's who you are. That is your mission statement.
Exactly.
You know, it's like Nicklaus and Palmer and Tiger Woods. They're going to play golf until the day they die. That's who they are. And that's when life is happy and satisfying.
Definitely.
So that's why I come and I speak.
Thank you. No.
Thank you.
You've certainly organized some great knowledge on how people can actually get to a better path in life. And you've done a fantastic job of putting together cash flow and the book and everything. It has just taken off. I mean, you've been on Oprah. You've sold millions of books. At this point, how many books have been sold? And like, what's the track record of this book? Just so the listeners get an idea of the impact of what it is that you teach.
Well, first of all, I published a book in April 1997, and it was turned down by every book distributor, every book company. You know, they said, this book will never sell. So I really want to thank the network marketing organizations because they picked the book up and said, this guy is talking to us. All the guys that did well in school, you know, the journalists, the guys who were authors and working for book companies said, this guy is an idiot. This book will never sell. But thank God I put the book in my friend's car wash in Austin, Texas. And a member of the Internet Services, Dexter Yeager's organization, bought the book. I didn't know who Dexter Yeager was, but they bought the book. I had 1,000 copies, and nobody wanted to buy the book. So this guy calls up, and he goes, hey, great book. I said, yeah, thanks. He says, how many books you got? I said, I got about 1,000 copies. He says, I'll take them. And that's how the book got started. It went through the people that were looking for new ideas, fresh ideas, new ways of thinking of being rich rather than being an employee all your life. And that book just rocketed. So for years, it just rocked and rolled. And I was out building an oil company and a mining company and all those other things. But my book keeps selling. And I said, that's kind of interesting, you know. My game keeps selling. And I have a partner, Sharon, and she's running this company. She's my co-author in the book, and she's running this company. Meanwhile, I'm out chasing my mining deals and all this stuff like this and my oil deals. And I'm going, geez, I'm making so much money from this book. What's wrong with this picture? And then, of course, Oprah called. And in one day, I sold 1 million copies. So I'll give you guys some numbers. Since I self-publish, that means I get all the profit. So my net profit is $5 per book. So when she did 1 million copies in 1 hour, you know, I saw Nirvana.
It's a good hour.
I saw the second coming of you-know-who. Yeah. I mean, I said, whoa, that's horsepower. And now I'm walking down the street in New York, and people coming up to me, can I have your autograph? So life has changed after Oprah. There's pre-Oprah and after Oprah.
Yeah.
And I knew Jeff and Joe pre-Oprah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you've helped a lot of people, and that's great. I mean, I'm glad to see it because you're really helping a lot of people's lives with this. So let's pretty much get into it. I mean, in a nutshell, what's the difference in advice that your rich dad gave you versus your poor dad?
Well, in rich dad, poor dad, there were 6 basic lessons. Lesson number 1 is rich don't work for money. Okay. So in the world of money, there's good money and bad money. So there's earned income, portfolio income, and passive income. When you say to a child, go to school and get a job and work hard, that's earned income. The problem with earned income is 50% money. That means for every dollar you earn, government's going to take 50% of it forever and forever and forever. There's nothing you can do about it. All these guys running around with these tax schemes and how to pay less taxes. The fact is, if you're an employee, you're working for earned income, there is jack, nothing, zero you can do. You're screwed, tattooed, and, you know, locked up. So all these tax schemes and all that border on illegal simply because they're primarily targeted to employees, W-2 people. There's nothing. After 1943, there was a current tax payment act that basically ripped them apart. The irony of it, America in 1773 was founded as a tax-free country. That was called the Boston Tea Party. Then in 1913, I think they passed the 16th Amendment. Then 43, they made it legal to take your money first. So the second types of income are portfolio, which only paper assets, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. That's called 20% money. That means 20% of everything you make is taxed. That's not bad. But there's passive income, which is 80% of the time money from real estate, and real estate is 0% taxed. So to say to your child, go to school and get a job and put your money in mutual funds is actually suicidal, because even though you have this thing called a 401k or an IRA, and you think it's portfolio income, as an employee, your IRA and your 401k is still taxed at 50%, and they don't tell you that. So the school system out there is lying to the kids by saying the way to be successful is go to school, get a good job, and work your way up the corporate ladder, because you're always working for 50% money. Even your portfolio income, the money from your 401k, is taxed at 50%. And there's no hope for those guys. It's almost impossible. One or two may make it, you know, from the employee, like Jack Welch or General Electric, he can get rich. If you've got stock options with IBM, maybe you get rich. But the average guy is not going to get rich going to school and getting a job, because the taxes are your single largest expense. So that was one of the main lessons of my rich dad, was know what kind of income you work hard for. So I work hard for portfolio as well as passive income, but I don't work hard for a paycheck.
So what were the other differences in what your rich dad taught you versus what your poor dad taught you?
Well, the second lesson, rich dad, poor dad, was the importance of financial literacy, income statements and balance sheets, assets and liabilities. I think the revolution was that most people look at an income statement and a balance sheet as separate. They're actually related. Even when I was in business school going through accounting, the accounting teacher really didn't get the relationship between income statements and balance sheets. So in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, since I was a dummy in school, and my rich dad taught me by pictures, you know, Cliff Notes and comics.
Right.
So I drew pictures. That book hit a major chord because I was speaking to the mass of people, not the journalists or the editors of book companies. Because I drew pictures. You know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, they say. So by doing income statements and balance sheets, people understood different assets and liability. So the average middle class person, they go to school, get a job, they're taxed at 50%, and then the first thing they say is buy a big house because it's a tax write-off. Now, if you're financially illiterate, you know that is bad advice, simply because for every dollar you pay in interest, the government only gives you back 30%. Now, if you think that's smart, give me a dollar, and instead of 30 cents, I'll give you 50 cents back all day long. But people go, yes, I'm intelligent. You know, that's stupid. Why would you give the government a buck to get 30 cents back? That doesn't make any sense to me. But they think these educated, you know, I'm a PhD and all this stuff, I got an MBA. That's stupid. Don't give the government a buck and get 30 cents back. That's your house. You know, that's not. So most people think their house is an asset. If you read a financial statement, you'll see it's really a liability. I'm not saying don't buy a house. I have a big house. And every month, my monthly payment on that house is $22,000 a month. A lot of people don't make $22,000 a month, but my payments are that high. But I'm not stupid enough to call that monthly cash flow of $22,000 a month an asset. That thing is a liability at this moment. Now, simultaneously, I own large apartment houses, and every month those apartment houses throw in about $100,000 a month. So my apartment house is by my big house.
Right.
That's why I don't have to work. So I call my apartment houses assets because they put money in my pocket, and I call my big house a liability because it yanks money from my pocket every month. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't have value. I'm not saying that, you know, within 2 or 3 years I can sell it for about $4 or $5 million profit. But at this moment in time, as I speak right now, that house of mine is like a vacuum cleaner in my wallet, sucking cash. Well, if it's sucking cash out, it's a liability.
And that's a great point.
That's a difference.
Yeah, can you elaborate on that a little bit and really clarify for people listening the difference between assets and liabilities, so that's really crystal clear in
that? Yeah, the most important word my rich dad said in business, number one, was cash flow. Okay, I'm going to talk about that. It's which way the cash is flowing. So for most people, the cash is flowing into their income statement via earned income.
Mm-hmm.
50% tax gone. The second thing they do is they buy this big house, cash gone. So their two largest expenses, number one is tax, number two is interest. And they wonder, how come I'm not getting ahead? But they think they're doing the smart and the right thing. That's the trick. Do you understand? So the trick is mental. If you want to be rich, you have to change your thinking from a middle class or a poor person to a rich person. So mentally, I knew financially that when I look at my income statement, you don't see a big paycheck. I do have a big paycheck, I hate it simply because 50% is gone.
Right.
But you look at my income comes from real estate and from small companies. So I have a lot of portfolio income and I have a lot of passive income simply because I don't have to pay that much tax on it. And on top of that, earned income is you working. That's labor. Passive income and portfolio income is income from assets. In other words, the reason I don't work is because I worked hard to build assets. I didn't work hard to climb the corporate ladder. That's insanity because it's really hard to get ahead that way.
Right.
So I'm a rich person because I have assets working for me. And the highly educated people, the only asset working for them is their ass on the line. You know? I sat there, and as a kid at 15 years old, I was completely messed up. I'm going, holy moly, you know, and the teacher kept pounding me. And I did flunk out of school twice because I can't write. I can't write, and I can't read. I'm an idiot. But I have 4 books on the New York Times bestseller list. I have 4 books on the Wall Street Journal because I can't write. But the difference is I can't write, but I can communicate.
Right.
And there's a difference between people who write and nobody reads
them.
Huge
difference.
And people who speak and nobody listens to them. You know, so communication is not writing and reading. It's people hearing you, understanding you, talking to their souls. Communication means what do we have in common? You know, when you hit the common man, the common person at the soul, you communicate. But most of these intellectuals don't communicate with anybody else but their own peers.
Right.
And that's why they drive old jalopy cars.
Well, that brings up a point about what you mentioned in your book, which is a term you use called financial literacy, which I would like you to really talk about. I remember reading in Rich Dad Poor Dad where you say that some people will hear things or they'll read things, but it doesn't absorb. They don't really understand it. And so how does one person get to that level, and what does it actually mean to be financially literate?
Financial literacy means understanding the vocabulary and the numbers. It means understanding an income statement and a balance sheet. Can you read a financial? When I read a financial of an individual, let's say I have this doctor friend here in Phoenix. He makes $500,000 a year. He has a big house, nice car. When I read his financial, the guy's broke. You know, he looks good to the public, but when I read his financial, I know this guy's broke because his house is rented, his car is leased, and he has about 6 girlfriends. I mean, he's having a good time. The boy is having a good time, you know. And he's making about $500,000 a year, but he's broke. He is gonzo. I mean, he's a poor person. He came from a poor family. You learn money habits from your family. And so he has a poor person's mentality, which is live for today.
Right.
Now, I know other people, you know, they're making $100,000 a year, and they got their 401k, and they got their house. At least they got something. But that is really a middle-class mentality, because they're still, their primary source of income is from earned income, which is the worst kind of income to work for. So I read a financial, and I can tell right away, just by looking at the financial literacy, whether this person is going to be rich, poor, middle class, like that. It's not how much money you make. So the reason financial statements are so important is because there's like x-ray vision, and I can read real quick. I can read a company, and I can tell whether they're going to be rich or poor immediately. The other thing about financial statements is this, is when I flunked out of school, my poor mom, she was hysterical. And she's like, you'll never be a doctor. I said, well, I wasn't planning on being one, you know. And she said, you'll never get a good job. I said, good, I'm not planning on getting one of those either. You know, it was all that hysteria. My fourth book is Rich Kid, Smart Kid. It's about how you teach your kids to find your kid's genius, because every kid is a genius. My genius was not academic. So if you're having kids who are having trouble in school, Rich Kid, Smart Kid's good for that, because you'll find your child's genius. If a child is labeled stupid, ADD, you know, I'd be the poster child for Ritalin today, because I can't sit still. I was jumping out the windows.
I vote there. Yeah.
As soon as the teacher said, okay, a roll is taken, I said, good. I was gone. I'm still that way. I own my office building, but I don't have an office, because I can't stand being locked in a room.
Right.
My job is to go out there and drum up deals, you know.
Right.
And so this, every child is a certain genius, and that's why Rich Kid, Smart Kid is really important to read, because you want to find your genius as well as your child's genius. If you're not using your genius, it's hard to get rich. Like Michael Jordan would probably make a lousy accountant. You know?
Absolutely. Exactly.
His genius was on the basketball court. And you got to find the court that you want to play on. My poor dad was really good. He held me in school. I get congressional appointments to Naval Academy and to Merchant Marine Academy and all that. It's just, I was bored. I was just so bored with school. So I went to 2 schools. I went to flight school simply because I learned by doing. I went to college to drive ships. And when I got out of college, the academy, I went to flight school to drive airplanes. And that's why I went to Vietnam as a pilot, because I'm a guy who learns by doing, not by sitting around listening to some idiot telling me what to memorize. I don't do it that way. So the thing about the financial statement that's so important, my rich dad sat me down and he says, well, you know, son, you have failing grades on your report card. He says, let me give you a secret. I said, what's that? He says, my banker has never once asked me for my report card.
That's a great point.
Yeah, my banker has never asked me, you know, are you a straight A student? You're a straight A student. Let me give you $10 million.
Yeah.
You know, he says, what does a banker ask you for? The banker asks you for a financial statement. Now, 99% of all kids leaving school are clueless to a checkbook, much less a financial statement.
Right.
They barely know a credit card. So if you want to get ahead, the financial statement, that's the real world report card. I mean, that is the real world. Your financial statement is real world.
You know, that's a great point, the real world report
card. It is the real world, because what a banker wants to see is not how academically smart you are. The banker wants to see how financially smart you are. And so most schools don't teach financial statements. That's why you leave school, but they give you this report card. And I said most people are Al Bundys, you know, like you know, Al Bundy scored 4 touchdowns at Polk High, and he's 50 years old, and he's still living in his 4 touchdowns. Well, I have a friend who comes up to me and says, I was a straight-A student. What were you? I said, you're an Al Bundy, you know what I mean? You're still living in the past with your straight A's. Look at my financial. Look at yours. This is my report card. It's my financial statement. The worst thing about being financially literate is, you know, in school, every quarter they tested you, gave you a report card. Well, the average person, since they don't know what a financial statement is, they're at 65. They get the report card at age 65, and they fail, not they flunked. The good thing about me, my report card is checked twice a month. My accountant goes over my financial statement and says, hey, sweetheart, you know, shape up here, change this and change that. So I'm constantly having my report card, but it's not A's and B's. It's measured in dollar signs. And that's what financial literacy is. So if you don't know a financial statement, you don't know how well you're doing or how poorly you're doing.
Right.
And that's why report cards are so important. So your financial statement is vital if you want to become rich, because you want to check it once a week, twice a month, once a quarter with your accountant. Accountant is a very important person on my team.
What kind of difference do you feel like it would make if that was taught in school and everybody learned that from the time they were young all the way through?
Well, I'm not into those conspiracy theories. But I've always wondered, why don't they teach
that? Yeah, exactly. Well, same for me. Exactly.
Think,
why not?
I think if you taught the kids the real tax law and accounting, they wouldn't get a job. They wouldn't be employees. I think the school system is designed to produce employees. Go to school so you can get a job. Now, I read about that in Rich Kid, Smart Kid. Our school system comes from Prussia, the German system. And its only purpose was to create soldiers and employees, people who would do as they're told without thinking. When I was in the Marine Corps in Vietnam, I saw a lot of really highly educated people. They just followed orders. They may be a colonel or something, but they just followed orders.
Right.
Yours is not to question why. Yours is but to do or die. And into the valley of death rode the 600, Alfred Lord Tennyson. And that was the Marine Corps. They wanted smart people who would just do as they're told. And that's what the school system produces. So when somebody like me says, hey, I don't want to do it that way, F, ADD, Ritalin, straitjacket, kick them out.
Right.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it's not just in the military. It's like in the entire world.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
What does a corporation want? They want somebody who the boss will come in and say, do as you're told.
Right.
Don't question me. Just do as you're told. And if you knew the tax laws, you wouldn't do what you're told. You would find out that your boss is getting, your boss is getting rich because he owns the company. He has better tax advantages than you. So those are the things. I think if they actually educated people, they wouldn't do what the school system teaches them.
Yes, I would agree with that, definitely. Well, let's talk about cash flow, and then we'll talk a little bit about your philosophies on investing and such. What is your definition of cash flow?
Cash flow is the most important word because you got to control it. Second most important word is leverage. It's how you do more with less. The problem with being an employee is that your leverage is 1-to-1. Every hour you put in, you get X amount of pay. Or every day you put in, every month. It's a 1-to-1 ratio. So the reason that cash flow is important is if you want to increase cash flow, you've got to increase the second most important word is leverage. And this is the point I want to make on leverage. My poor dad said the rich were greedy. There's many ways you can get rich. The most popular way of getting rich is to marry somebody for money. It's a very happy sport. You know, you can see it, you see it in every bar in Scottsdale. How much money you got? You're ugly, but you got money. I'll go out with you, you know. And stuff like that. And people say, oh, that's not true. And I think that's why Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire was kicked off the air, because it was too close to home. It was too real. I know women who would not marry a poor boy. Or a rich guy would not marry a poor girl. We know that. We're in love. You know, BS, you know, give me a break. BS stands for blue sky. You know, yeah, tell me the truth. In Singapore, they call it the 3 C's. The girl will go up to the guy and say, you have the 3 C's, which means condo, credit card, and car. You don't have the 3 C's, you're out. I don't care how good looking you are. Because in Singapore, it's such an expensive place that you marry a poor man, you're finished. I mean, money does affect it. You can get rich by being cheap. And being cheap is, you know, like the Silas Marner and Scrooge. Those are the guys that cut up your credit cards, live below your means, you know, pinch every penny, shop pork butt on sale, and all that stuff. You know, that's the trouble is rich, as you say, if you get rich by being cheap, end of the day, you're still cheap.
Right.
And the world hates cheap, rich people, right?
Yes.
And the other way you can get rich is by being a crook. You can run drugs and all that stuff. The trouble is you go to jail if you get caught. And I have no plans of being somebody's boyfriend in jail. You know, it's not part of my business plan here. So I'll be honest and get rich. And then the other way you can get rich is by being generous. And so this is the thing I want to say. The reason Joe and Jeff make so much money is they're generous. And that's what most people don't figure out. It's called leverage. The other day I was at a Cardinals football game, but the only guy there because they're not doing well. But the school teacher walked up to me and she says, I want you to sign this petition. So what's the petition? She says, I want to teach half the kids and get twice the pay. You see, to me, that's greedy.
Yeah.
They want to get paid more and do less. My rich dad taught me, if you want to get rich, do more for more people at a better price. The reason I'm a rich person is because when I take a company public, I give people shares of my company. Of course, I only pay 4 cents and they pay a dollar for it, but I'm still sharing. When I wrote my book, I was just sharing my ideas, and that's why I make so much money, is because I share.
Yes. Yep.
Now, when I did my board game, at the time I was charging like $10,000 to come to my seminar, and I said, I'm only reaching like 300 people once a month. If I put all I knew into a board game, then I could reach more people. Now, the moment I did that, I made more money again. Now, the thing I'm working on in the next 2 years is take my board game online on the web. I have the Sony PlayStation guys doing it for me because I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. You know?
Yeah,
I always hire smart people. So they're going to put it on web for me. I can broadcast throughout the world, and all I have to do is charge $2 for that game for a month. So I'm going to sell a subscription for $24 a year, really cheap, right? $2. And my goal is 30 million players. So $2 per month is $60 million. That's called leverage. That's how you get rich. But the average employee or self-employed person thinks I have to work harder or raise my prices. You're actually reverse leverage at that point, but it's a form of leverage. So those are all the things that my rich dad taught me. The reason I teach the game cash flow is because it teaches you the fundamentals of income statements and balance sheets, but it teaches you how to invest, how to read, you know, how to understand how cash flows, and then you can leverage that, all that stuff. So it becomes a mental process. There's three ways of learning, mentally, emotionally, physically. Once you change mentally, it gives you the courage to overcome your fear emotionally. If you don't know the mental processes, naturally you'll say, well, investing's risky, you know, businessmen are crooks and they're greedy, and you live with this fear. All my family are school teachers. They live in this little world of intellectuals, high grades, smart, you know, college professors. Mentally they're good teachers, but mentally they're poor business people.
Talk about that concept you just said just a minute, because I think it's real important for people to understand also the idea that investing is not risky if done properly.
Well, investing isn't risky. Being an idiot's risky.
I love the way you put that in the book. It was great.
You know what I mean? If you don't know how to drive and you get in your Ferrari and you hit the freeway, that's pretty risky. You know what I mean?
Right.
There is risk and being risky. So what you want to do is know there's risk. There's risk crossing the street, but you don't have to be risky about it. And since you're not educated, to me, the most risky thing you can do is buy a mutual fund and put it in a 401k. But that's what all the people are doing. So, well, why is that? And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying a mutual fund in a 401k is bad. I'm saying being ignorant of what you're doing is bad. Please hear me on that thing.
That's what I was going to say. Clarify that because a lot of people really won't get that point.
Because, you know, here I am, you know, working for Merrill Lynch or Solomon. Or yes, buy mutual funds, and it's a safe and smart thing to do. Well, if you believe that, you're risky. You're being an idiot believing what a salesman's doing. As my rich dad said, never ask an insurance salesman if you should buy insurance.
So the risk is coming in because people are believing what someone else is telling them without understanding it.
What is risky is being lazy, not checking it out, not doing your due diligence, not getting a broader brushstroke of investing, and just believing somebody who's selling you something. That's risky. So it's not the thing that's risky, it's you're risky. So I wouldn't buy mutual funds because I know they're risky. The reason they're risky is this. Let's say the fund buys IBM at 50, goes to 100, market crashes. So they have to sell their best fund, which is IBM, right, the best stock. So what they're going to do is they sell the best. The value of the fund goes down because they're liquidating their best holdings. Now, on top of that, when IBM went from 50 to 100, you now have what's called a capital gains consequence hidden inside the fund. Well, the fund doesn't pay that capital gains tax because they bought it at 50, sold it at 100. You got $50 in capital gains, or about $10 in gains right there. They pass that on to you. They don't absorb that. So not only have you lost money, the fund's lost money, but you now have a tax consequence. you got taxed for losing money. As a business owner, if I lose money, the government gives me a tax break. But an employee, they get taxed for losing money on top of it. So that's why it's risky. The other thing that's risky is most people assume that what's called the rule of 72, the compounding. Well, that's assuming the market always goes up.
Right, exactly.
And the worst thing about it is when the market goes down, people panic, they get depressed and all this. When the market crashes, he should be, you know, taking laps around the rosary beads and celebrating, thanking God for a market crash, because that's when you get rich. It's the stock market having a sale.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
The market's having a sale. I mean, you should be in there saying, thank you, I'll take it. Yeah, give me more, give me more. But the people who are playing it safe, got a safe, secure job, went to school, got a good education, they're going, and they're selling everything when it's going down. They should be buying, not selling. You always buy low, you know, sell high, but most people buy high and sell low. That's why they get ripped up there.
Right.
You know, if Safeway was having a sale on pork butt, all those guys would be in there buying all the pork butt they can. But when the stock market or the real estate market is having a sale, these guys are selling. That's why they're the butt.
I think another part of that, too, is when you feel like you've only got X number of dollars from your salary and that's all you're going to make the rest of your life, and you lose part of it, there is no more, and that's that mental shift to go to abundance instead of scarcity.
Yeah, and the reason they think that is because they think one-to-one, a day's pay for a day's work. They're, they're in the leverage of a one-to-one ratio. They're not generous people. Government's taking 50% of it, so they're investing with after-tax dollars. I invest with pre-tax dollars. So my losses are less because I don't have a tax in fact, if I lose my pre-tax dollars, government gives me a tax break. They don't do that to the employee.
And also, so much of what you have learned and so much of your knowledge base also comes from the fact that you've probably taken a lot of hits along the way.
That's part of learning.
Right.
See, I said this, learning is mental, emotional, and physical. So emotionally, what the school system says, memorize the right answers and don't make mistakes.
Right.
The fear of failing, the fear of, you know, losing faith, you know, you're an idiot if you fail. Well, if you look at the way you learn to walk was by falling down. The way you learn to ride a bicycle is you fall off a couple of times. But when it comes to stock market or finances, if you have the belief that most school teachers do, which is don't make a mistake, mistakes are bad, mistakes means you're stupid, means you're a failure, then you're not going to do anything. You know what I mean? So it's mental, emotional, physical. So physically what you're going to do is not much.
Right.
What you're going to do is play it safe like you were taught, your parents probably did, and all this. So when I invest, let's say I'm in real estate, I start small. I start with really small investments, and I go for 5 years. And whereas 5 years is my college degree on real estate, if I'm going to do stock trading, I'll go 5 years. I'll start small. I know I'm going to lose some money in the process, but I'm willing to stick it out through that loss period for 5 years. Like what you guys are doing with the marketing and all this. When you start a carpet cleaning business, you got to give it 5 years minimum. Because that's your college degree in that.
I think it's a great perspective on it. So many people, if they're not making money in 30 days or 2 weeks or whatever it is, they're done. They're on to something else. They never have that chance to learn.
It didn't work.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The idea didn't work. They didn't work. They can give it time. So the first thing you invest is time, and most people aren't willing to invest in that. You know, like, or I'll say something, you know, why don't you buy a piece of real estate? They go, oh, I don't want to clean toilets. Well, what makes you think I want to clean toilets? What makes you think I can clean a toilet?
Right.
But what they do is they come up with some poor person's mental attitude or a lazy person's mental attitude, and they don't go beyond their own personal mental belief system. And that's why they're poor. That's why they're lazy. Because they can't control the number one thing, which is their mind, their thoughts.
I think that's such a big distinction that you make, the difference between wanting to avoid making mistakes versus actually going out there and trying to win.
No,
and
I'm
so
willing
many
to.
People are just programmed to avoid the mistakes, but they never are out there trying to win.
That's like saying, I want to play golf as good as Tiger Woods, but I'm not willing to make any bad shots.
Right.
Well, welcome to the club, you know, you and all the other people that are watching him and he's playing.
Right.
And Tiger Woods loses more than he wins. You know, when you do a direct mailing piece, right?
Yeah,
you expect to lose 98% of the time, don't you?
Exactly.
If you do 2% hit, you win 2% and lose
98%.
You're doing great.
Exactly.
But these idiots from the academic world, they think that if you fail 98% of the time, you're an idiot. And they're the idiots.
And because so you should be patting yourself on the back if you fail that much because you're learning something.
Yeah, well, plus the real world is not the world of academia.
Right.
And that's, I grew up in the academic world. That's why I was so messed up. And I go to my rich dad's world, and they're completely different people. You have a choice. I'm not making one right or wrong. You make your choice. It's a free country. But the blessing I had with Rich Dad Poor Dad is I didn't make a choice. I didn't want to operate in the world where if you make a mistake, you're considered a failure. Failure is a verb, not a noun. But what the school system did was they labeled me failure, stupid, you know, not educatable. How dare they do that? You know, how dare they? Because in the real world, I make much more money. I make millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they're still scrambling for $100,000. You know, so what counts in the real world, what makes more success, is number of people you serve, and you serve them well, you'll make more money. The fewer people you serve, the less money you make. That's why they don't make much money. That's why that school teacher coming up to me and saying, I want to teach half the students and get twice the pay. The reason I'm going to make more money is I want to teach 30 million people every day for less money.
Right.
You know, I want to give them how to take a company public through an IPO. I want to teach them how to buy real estate and all this, but I'm only going to charge them $2 a month. So yeah, I want to teach more people for less money, whereas an academia coming from the employee quadrant, they're going to think, well, I want to work less and get paid more. That's your free country. And you want to think that way, think that way, but that's not the way I want to think.
Is that what you feel like would be the first step or the shift to make, to start asking yourself that question, how can I serve more people
yes.
for less money?
That's the fundamental of getting rich. You know, we talked about the quadrant, the cash flow quadrant.
Right.
Cash flow quadrant is in book number two. I think it's my most important book because if you're willing to make a change, most people go from job to job, the E quadrant. Or if they say, I'm going to quit my job and go out on my own, they go to the S quadrant.
Let's explain those quadrants.
E stands for employee. The way you know an employee is by their words. Again, vocabulary. Employee will always say the same words. I'm looking for a safe, secure job with benefits. How much time off do I get? What's my overtime pay? You know, that's that mentality.
Right.
Self-employed person is a person who is, they're going to do it on their own. You know, if you want it done right, you got to do it on your own. Or their theme song is, nobody does it better than me. And that's, S stands for smart. There's a doctor's, a lawyer's, accounts. It all stands for psychotic. They don't trust anybody else because they have to do it on their own.
Right.
And the B quadrant is a business owner. That's OPT, other people's time. I want to hire people smarter than me. I don't want to be the smartest guy on the planet. I can be the C student hiring the B students who are the E's and the A students who are the S guys.
Right.
See, I hire the smartest attorneys, the smartest accountants. You know, in school, I was very cooperative at test time, but that's called cheating. But in the real world, I pay on my retainer. The B quadrant and the I quadrant are team sports, and you want the smartest guys on your team. You're going to play the Green Bay Packers tomorrow. You don't want a bunch of A students on your team. You want Bubba.
Right.
You know, you
right.
want the guy who likes ripping heads off.
Right.
Okay, yeah, you're on my team. You're going to put your team together. Well, the same in business. You want to put your team together. So I have the smartest accountants, the smartest attorneys, all the A students. Then I hire El Presidentes of companies because these guys can run companies. They can deal with employees. I'm terrible with dealing with employees. I deal well with real estate because it's dumb. It's stupid. It's just like me. It doesn't do much, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that building. It doesn't do anything. I love real estate. You know, I like this stuff. So the B quadrant person has to hire smart people and be a great leader. The reason I'm in the Marine Corps is I learned to lead people. I learned to ask young men to give their lives for their country. If you can do that, you're an entrepreneur. But if you can't do that, if they don't follow you into death, they won't follow you into the toilet. You got to lead. And so that's where I learned to speak to young men. We say, okay, look, the chances of us dying are probably 60% today. But I want you to remember one thing. I said, job description says not to die. Our job description is to kill. So if we're going to die today, the only way we're going to live is kill them before they kill us. And it's a hard way to live for about a year of your life. You live on that edge. As my gunnery sergeant, my crew chief said to me, he says, the trouble with being a Marine helicopter pilot or being in the Marine Corps is there's no second place. There is no second place. What I learned in Vietnam was to live only at the first place. There's only one place, and that's to win. But you risk losing every single moment of the day. And when you learn mentally, emotionally, physically to live that way, then you have a good chance of becoming an entrepreneur. But if you don't have that mental, emotional, and physical stamina, then get a job.
Yeah.
But the shift from the S to the B was from small business to big business. The difference between a small business person is if they stop working, their income stops. With me, the reason financial literacy, where my board game cash flow teaches, I run 7 different companies, but I don't work in them. I run them, but I run them through the financials. So I can earn more money doing less and less work. If you're the E and the S, the only way you generally earn more money is to work harder. And that's why the S caps out about $100,000. Because there's only so many hours in a day.
Right.
Some doctors make $500,000 a day. So the E and the S, is income is limited. The B and the I is unlimited. So the E and the S thinks from scarcity, and the B and the I thinks from abundance. So with me, it's, the web is just the most beautiful thing. Television, tapes, and all this. Telephone is just beautiful because I can serve more people by doing less work.
Goes back to that concept
yeah.
of leverage.
Yeah, it's leverage. So if you want to get rich, let's say you're carpet cleaning. All you have to do is figure out, how can I serve more clients? How can I serve them more, give them better service at a better price? If you do that and do that diligently, you'll become richer and richer. If you think, well, I want to get paid more, I want to work with rich people, I want to work less, but I want to get paid more, but I want to work with fewer people, then you'd be a good S. But the moment you say, I want to serve more people at a better price and do a better job, see, I want to beat those school teachers. I want to give a better education at a lower price to more people. With the web, see, my book is now in 32 different languages. My brand, Rich Dad, is known throughout the world. It's not going to be hard to get my 30 million subscribers within 5-10 years. And then 30 million subscribers at $2 a month, that's 60 million a month. That's not bad, you know? But that's the way I think. Yeah, I pay my golf game and all
that. Exactly.
But the best thing about it is I don't have to do it.
Right.
See, once I set it up, it runs. And I'm out of there. I go set something else up. That's a bee in the eye. It's a different mental, emotional, and physical viewpoint. You can make the change. For those of you listening to this tape right now, you're already making this change. You're already in the psychotic quadrant. Just keep thinking of how can I do a better job for more people at a better price.
That's, in your opinion, the key to making that shift from the S to the B, from, say, a self-employed person to a real business owner.
Well, that's my idea. Another way is you can go marry somebody for money. But the trouble is you got to dance a lot of dances, you know?
Go back to what you said just a minute ago, Robert, because I think it was a real important point. You talked about when you're doing all this, you put together the team and you hire the best people, your accountants and your lawyers and all of the other people. I think that's a real important thing, and it goes back to an idea of basically knowing what game you want to play at the start. And the example you gave, I think, was great. If you're going to play the Green Bay Packers, you don't hire all the academic people, you hire Bubba.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an important idea. And like you said, in school we're taught if we have anybody that we work with and that we want to help us, it's cheating and we're kicked out of school.
That's right.
And you get out in the real world and it's the exact opposite. We need to have that team and we need to cooperate.
That's right. The reason that most people don't do well is they learn in school that they have to be the smartest guy on the team. And what I learned is if you're an idiot, you have a better chance. And since I was an idiot, I was a village idiot, a class clown, and I like to cheat, I had a good chance of getting rich my way. So you got to find your way. You know, if you're going for brain surgery, you don't want me, you know what I mean? You want the guy who came from a student, the top of his class from Duke Medical School or something. You want the best, right? But what I'm saying is you want to get rich, you can still be an idiot and get rich. That's a good part about it. Well, what I'm saying is find the way that works best for you because we're not the same. And so if your job is like Jack Welch to lead General Electric into the future, go for it. If you think you're the next Paul McCartney, go for it. If you think you can outshoot Tiger Woods, go for it. But, you know, find a way. You know, if you saw my golf game, you know why I'm in business. It's not my gift.
I think business is like one big game anyway, and I think just like the way that you spell it out in cash flow, I think it's the way that people should really look at everything they're playing. I mean, in school, you have bullies, you have people that cheat on the playground. I mean, if you can keep that mindset when you're playing in business and understand that there are things that you can do to put advantages on your side,
right.
And you can do all of this, you know, ethically, legally, and morally, and make a ton of money and help a lot of people and do all that stuff. I think that just having the right mindset is half the battle.
Mindset is very important. I go on the football field and somebody kicks my butt. You go, oh, you know, they played unfair. They cheated. I'm a wimp. I'm the big loser. And what you got to do is you turn the L, you know, put the L in before the loser. You got to turn losers to leaders. At that point, you got to turn around and say, look, you guys, we got our butt handed to us today. Tomorrow, we're going to practice harder. We're coming back at them. That's a leader.
Right.
But there's too many people who, you know, call their attorneys and they want to sue them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the wimp, you know. Yeah. I mean, I call my attorney and say, we're going to beat them. Let's get together. We're going to play harder. That's a winner's mentality because losing is part of winning. Anybody who avoids losing avoids winning.
Right.
And the reason so many people are unsuccessful, they're spending most of their lives CYAing it, you know, avoiding losing, not making a mistake. That's what school teachers teach. Don't make mistakes because then you're a failure. Well, 9 out of 10 businesses fail. That means you got to be willing to fail 10 times. That's all it means to me.
Exactly.
It's the ratio. You know, what's my risk-to-reward ratio? Because if you make it once, you're set for life, sweetheart. Right. But are you willing to fail 9 times? Now, what happens with a lot of guys, entrepreneurs, they make it that one time, but they forget the odds are still 9 out of 10.
Exactly.
You know, it's like it's going to blackjack. I got an ace-queen, right? It doesn't mean next hand you got an ace-queen. Next hand, the odds go back. 9 out of 10, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
So what I learned to do was understand the ratios of leverage, cash flow and all this, and that it's a game. And you go out there, and sometimes the bear gets you, and sometimes you get the bear. I want to get that bear, and if the bear kicks your butt today, if it doesn't make you want to get smarter and stronger and better, then you shouldn't play the game, because that's all it is.
Choose a different game.
Yeah. Well, get a job with the school department.
There you go.
Join the NEA, the labor union, you know? Have a good time.
It's so similar to marketing also, too, because in the world of marketing, you don't call it failure when you send out a direct mail piece that doesn't work. You call it testing.
That's right.
You know, and if people can look at all of this as they're just testing to see what works, because when you get a winner, you get a big winner.
Then what do? You leverage it.
Exactly.
You say, let's do it more.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I find, and maybe you can speak on your experience in that, Robert, that people miss so many times is they have something that does work in their life, in their business, or wherever, and they never take that next step to say, I want to leverage it. They always say, I want to go off and create something totally new, different, or somewhere else.
That's correct. They don't capitalize on their wins. In other words, I wrote this book here. If I was just an author, you know, self-employed author, I'd be the biggest loser of all. Well, I took the book. Within 3 years, we had 3 books. Now we have 4 books on the shelf. We have 3 games. We're going web. I'm doing an infomercial with Time Life. PBS has now asked me to do a series for them. I'm speaking at the Financial Fest and all this. That's called capitalizing on the win. Just because I have 1 best-selling book doesn't mean jack. Right? Doesn't mean jack.
Exactly.
As a business owner, I need to capitalize on that win and keep playing the game. On top of that, once you understand corporations, which is rich dad, poor dad, I just spin different corporations off to do different jobs.
Right.
Like, you know, we're going to meet tomorrow. I'm going to bring my seminar guy in. That's a different corporation. He's 10 times smarter than me. Always hang out with people smarter than you. As Rich Dad said, you're the smartest guy in your team. Your team is in trouble.
Because you're an idiot.
Well, it goes back to the thing of hire people that are smarter than you to prove how smart you actually are by doing so.
That's right.
I mean, it's true.
My Rich Dad said to me, he says, you know, you're not that bright. You're pretty lazy, so you'd be a good businessman.
Yeah. I always thought it was great advice to hang out with people that make more money than you do, too.
Yeah.
You've got to learn from them.
Why resent
them?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's the other thing. So many people resent being around someone that's smarter than them or makes more than them or whatever the case is.
Well, why do you think that is? Think it's just mainly jealousy?
Jealousy. Professional jealousy. It's human nature. The thing I want you to say, everybody, I have the same fear. I have the same doubt, same low self-esteem. You know, I got to go to the gym and flog my fat and hoggy body around the place like everybody else. But it doesn't mean you have to be a loser.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I have the same fear. When I make a mistake, I feel like the lowest piece of you-know-what on the earth. I hate it. It takes me about a month to recover. Sometimes it's a really bad mistake, like losing $1 million. And you sit there, you go, now what did I learn from this? You call your attorney, or you know, wimp and cry and blame. You're the loser. Like when I lost my first company at age 29, I was a millionaire in my 20s. And then, so what caused you to fail? Well, there were many external reasons, like the economy and my suppliers and all this. But really what caused me to fail was fast cars and really fast women. And you know what? I don't regret a thing. I was single and rich, and I had the pretty girls and fast cars, and I was in the paper, and you know, I was a nylon and Velcro wallets, and I was...
Yeah, you invented those.
Yeah, I was a stud in town and all this, and I went off purpose. I started chasing the good life instead of building the business.
That's a good term, off purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with having the pretty dollies and the fast cars and all this, but you can't shoot the goose that's laying the golden egg, and that's what I did, was I just ate the egg and shot the goose at the same time.
Wow. And you gotta know which game you're playing.
Yeah, my girlfriends at the time had a great time, and I don't regret it, because you know, when you're 29 years old, 28 years old, have a good time. You know, there's enough time to get serious and get old. But today, I see the young people, and I see them making the same mistakes I do, and I make them have a good time. You know, but recover, don't blame, because those are the best times. When I lost that first million, man, I tell you, I had a lot of soul searching, and it was my sloppiness, my inattention to detail, hiring people less than me, not hiring the best. You know, things like that. That really come home to roost. How did you learn to write copy or direct mail? It's because I sent so many out that didn't work. I wrote this brochure once. I thought it was the cat's meow, and I showed it to my staff. They had no idea what I was writing about.
They said, we worked for it.
I said, go back to the drawing board. And I got angry. I'm going to fire you. You tell me that I'm the boss here and all this stuff. And I said, go back to the drawing board. And that's how you grow. You're not right. You're just making better choices.
Yeah, there's something I wrote down from a note that I took from reading your book, and it says, if you don't first handle fear and desire and you get rich, you'll only be a high-paid slave. That really hit home for me, because I think so many people, you know, they do have certain wins in their life, but they don't control it, they don't handle it, and they don't leverage it, like you say.
Right.
And the fact is, there's so much knowledge that you're going to learn from mistakes. The question is, what are you going to do with it? Because you're going to have them. And people that are listening to this have got to be willing to have failures and make mistakes, but at the same time, they got to use their brain. And part of using their brain is listening to what you're saying. Associate with the best people that you can get. Do the right things. And you have just stacked the chances of becoming super successful, super wealthy, so far in your favor compared to what the typical person actually lives their life. I mean, it's not even funny.
One more thing to that is, the reason people are unsuccessful is because they do what they like. What intelligence is not doing what you like, but doing what you need to do. And I'm willing to do what I need to do. So if you look at why am I the most successful today, it's because I flunked out of school. And what am I successful at? Writing a book. I flunked out of business school because of accounting. What is my book about? Accounting. I hated copywriting because I can't write. But today I write copy. So the successful person does what's necessary, and the unsuccessful person says, but I'm doing what I like. I'm so creative and all that. You know, that's an idiot. You know, that is an idiot.
You won't get any disagreement from me on that one.
Because I don't like going to the gym every morning. You know, I hate it. You know, I get on that treadmill, man, I'm going, you know, I hate it. And I hate going to get my teeth clean. I hate going to brush my teeth. I hate going to see my, you know, but you do what you have to do. And successful people do what's necessary, and unsuccessful people do what they like. And that is the biggest difference. I am famous right now for the things I was the worst at. If you can understand that one. Because what I'm good at is, I really don't know what I'm good at, but what I sit and talk to you as is the biggest failure you've ever seen, but I've turned those failures into successes. Yeah. And that's the only difference.
Awesome. And I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier that's so important for people to get is that idea that if you got 9 out of 10 times you're going to fail and the one time it hits it big, you got to do the thing 10 times and be willing to go out there and make those 9 mistakes. It's and like you don't know if you're going to hit big the first time, the fourth time, the ninth time, whatever, but you keep going out there and playing until you hit it.
Yeah, that's horrible at selling. I came back from Vietnam and Rich Dad says, you got to learn how to sell. He says, get a job with IBM or Xerox. I'm like, but I hate selling because I hate a rejection. He says, the problem with you is you can kill them, but you can't take rejection, you know? And I had to learn to take rejection. And I had to learn that. And so I was wondering, how do you learn to take rejection? And there was this one salesman in Xerox. He said to me, he says, every day I've got to take 10 no's. Every day. And so he'd roar out the door looking for no's. You know, and I was looking for yeses. He says, if you look for no's, you'll find yeses. This guy goes out, hello, beat it, that's one.
9 more to go.
9 more to go. And I went, holy moly. You know what I mean? And pretty soon, he pitched him again. No! So that's 2. He tried a third time. They said no. He says, that's 3! Good grace! And then he'd go and knock on another door.
That's great. Well, see, that's an interpretation, too. Yeah. That's how to channel something so it becomes a positive.
Yeah. And he says, I've got to take 10 no's every day. So when I met my wife, and some of you have seen my wife, she is absolutely gorgeous. And she didn't marry me for my money because I was broke again because I lost a second company, you know? I was willing to lose 10 companies, but I made it on my third try. You know, I lost 2. But when I met my wife, she turned me down for 6 months straight. And every time she turned me down, like everybody, I'm ugly, I'm fat, you know, and she doesn't like me and all this, my crooked teeth, or, you know, whatever thing you hate about yourself, you'll find, right, at that moment. Well, that moment, I said, well, that was one no, let's try again. 6 months I asked her out, and finally, I found, did some market research, and I found out her best friend was my ex-girlfriend. I didn't even know that.
You know,
God always provides. So I called up my ex-girlfriend, her best friend, and what does every salesman ask for? A referral. So she goes, you are a slime dog. I said, yes, but I'm going to win. As I learned all of that stuff, and I asked, her name was Karen, my ex-girlfriend, she says, Karen, come on, tell her how good I am. You know, she says, you're not that good. I said, yeah, but lie for me, please. But that goes back to it, man. If it's not a game, you're not having fun, don't play.
Totally.
Yeah. If you're not willing to lose, you're not willing to win. That's the game.
Well, let's at least start pointing the listeners into a direction that you think they should take. If you could maybe ABC step it out on people that are just starting from the beginning. They don't really know what to turn. Obviously, I would highly recommend to read your books and all the knowledge that is there. I mean, what would you say to someone that's just starting out? They, up to this point of listening to the interview, never felt they had any financial literacy, and they have been misinformed throughout their lives through the educational system or whatever sources of knowledge that they've gotten. What would you say to those people on where to start so they can get themselves headed in the right direction?
Well, I think we were talking about earlier, you know, I was reading my website one day. This guy says, I'll be rich someday. That's like saying, I'll be healthy someday. What you have to do is set this goal. So my goal is $12 million a year with $1 million a month. See, rich is $1 million per year. Ultra rich is $1 million per month. Oprah does $200 million a year, so she can do it. I can do it. This is my goal. I don't know how I'm going to get there. Do you know what I mean? When I say to people, I'm going to do $12 million a year without working, that's not big money, but it's not bad. You know what I mean? As Ted Turner says, after $100 million, doesn't make any difference. But once you get on the B and I side, it's just rockets. It gets easier and easier to leverage because it's not you doing the leveraging.
Right.
It's other people, other systems, and other people's money leveraging for you. Once you see the B and the I side, it is easy. But making that crossing, 5-year plan, whatever it is hard. But the thing I say to people is that there is no tomorrow. You know, that's like saying, when I'm 65, I'll get in shape. When I'm 65, I'll be healthy. When I'm 65, I'll be wealthy. That's not the way it works. You are today. I've never seen tomorrow. What you do today will determine tomorrow. That is the only thing I know. So every day, you've got to do today what you want for tomorrow. So if you're not investing today, you're not reading a book, listening to tapes, you know, working hard, you know, testing, making mistakes, that's your future. It means you're not going to have any. At my New Year's Eve party, I asked people to write down their goals for 2001. And I realized that for most people, 2001 is no different than 2000 or 1999 or 1998. They don't have a future. They're not working for anything.
Right.
They're just hoping that tomorrow will be better.
Or they put the same goal down 6 years in a row and never done anything to move towards it.
The reason I brought that up is, you know, after all this success with Oprah and millions and millions and millions of dollars, I took two companies public and made millions of dollars there and all this. Somebody says, you can't expect next year to be better. And I said, who would I be if I didn't want it to be better or demand it to be better? You know, next year has got to be better than this year. Health, wealth, happiness, love, you know, all that stuff. So it's what you do today determines your tomorrow. What you are today is your tomorrow. And that's all you have to look at. I got up at 5 o'clock this morning. I strap on one of these Nightingale Conant tapes. I'm in there pumping away, you know, listening to all these guys yak around and all this. You know, come over here, miss the turnoff, but still come and talk to you guys because we're all educators working the same mission and all this stuff. But that's my future. That's what I'm doing today. My future is determined by what I do today, not tomorrow. And that's my lesson.
Great advice.
Absolutely great advice.
What is the most important piece of financial wisdom that people should teach their children?
Is that money is power. A lot of people say money is not that important. Let me tell you something. If you have money, you got power. If you abuse money, you take the abuse of money against you. Most people take the power of money and let it punish them every day. Slavery has not ended. It's called employment now.
It's changed the name.
What it says in the book is, to wake up in the middle of the night terrified about paying bills is a horrible way to live. To live a life dictated by the size of a paycheck is not really a life. And if that's something that people want to put their children through, or at least set them off on that path.
Go to school, get good grades, find a safe, secure job, work for 50% money, put your money in a 401k, invest long term, buy the dips. That's an idiot's formula for getting rich. You'll never get there from that because you don't know anything. What you're doing is doing as you're told, rather than thinking for yourself. Rich Dad said there's three basic lessons I don't write about. Number one is that money is just your ideas. That's why if you say you'll never get rich, guess what? You never will. If you say you can't afford something, you can't. You know, that's why my Rich Dad was a pretty religious man. He always said, and the word becomes flesh and dwelt amongst us. He says, what you say is who you become. What you think is who you are. So if you say I'm a poor person, guess what? You are. He said, I'm not interested in money. Well, money is not interested in you then. So you got to watch the most powerful asset you got, which is your thoughts and your words. The second thing you said was that money does not make you rich. That's what I talked about power. Money is power. So if you abuse the power of money and you go and buy a big car, a nice boat, which I love, you know, nice car and all that stuff, you're abusing the power of money, but you're abusing yourself because money is making you poorer and poorer because you're buying liabilities that you want to believe that some salesperson says, yes, buy this house because it's an asset. If you believe that, and you haven't checked it out, done your due diligence, you're the idiot. But worst of all, you're using the power of money against you and you become a slave to money. That's waking up in the middle of the night and squinging and screaming and all this. The third thing is there's only two kinds of money problems. One is not enough and one is too much. Which one do you want? My problem is too much money. The reason I spend so much time not in the office is I gotta look for investments. I build companies that throw off cash, but because they're B quadrant, not S quadrant, I spend my time either talking to guys like you or chasing down a deal because I've got to move my money because if you don't have a plan for your money, the government does. So that means I have got to go buy more real estate because real estate is where I hedge my money. The other thing I like about real estate, this is the final thing on investing, is how much money will a bank lend you for your mutual fund? None. You know, if you go into the banks, I want to buy $1 million worth of mutual funds, they'll say, nah. Let's say that it's Bank XYZ. I want to buy Bank XYZ stock for $1 million. They'll say no. But if I go into an apartment building for $1 million, the bank will lend me as much as I want. And I should tell you something, the difference between real estate and paper, which most of these guys are in, you know, 401ks. The bank will lend you money on real estate. I can get 110% financing on $1 million to $10 million building. That goes into my asset column. Makes me rich every day. So the secret I want to tell you about investing is this. Don't use your own money. It's always, the richer you get is use other people's money. The problem is, the better you get at doing that, you make more money. And the problem gets bigger. I'm scampering around right now looking at $100 million deals. You know, I started with a dinky little duplex, and now it becomes, holy moly, I got to move more money. But the more money I make, the more money they want to lend me. And so my problem is too much money. But I chose that as a kid. That was the problem I want. The problem with money, since we don't teach about it at home, most people follow in their parents' footsteps because you learn by watching and doing. And you have this problem of not enough money because you go out, you buy a house because you think it's an asset, and you get a good, safe, secure job, you get taxed at 50%. And you sit there living in your own delusional little world that's dysfunctional. It's your choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Choose your problem.
Yeah. It's a big problem moving money. I got to call my accountant. She said, have you bought something yet? No. I'll get on it. It takes a lot of time to find one of those things.
What is the one single most important idea or concept you'd like the listeners to take away from this interview?
Repeating again, you know, Rich, that's rule number one, was lesson number one, was that money's just an idea. What that really comes down to is we all live in different realities. What makes your reality is whatever you think is real. So if you think investing is risky, that's your reality. That's not my reality, but it's your reality. And if you hang out with people of the same reality, it makes it more real. So if you think you can't afford it, you think that's real, then that becomes your reality. The lesson I'd like to have here is whatever you think is real is your reality. And if you can't change what you think is real, then you don't change your reality. If you don't think that you can become a billionaire in 5 years, then that's your reality. I just don't want to be a part of your reality. I hang out with people who are willing constantly to expand the reality. The reason my rich dad was a rich man was that he worked on one thing. That was to change what he thought was real. And that you do every single day. He kept pushing his reality. In Rich Dad's Guide to Investing, I talk about walking along the ocean and he's seeing a beautiful piece of Hawaii beachfront property. My poor dad said, I can't afford it. That became his reality. My rich dad said, how can I afford that? And he put a business on it to buy the most expensive pieces of real estate in Hawaii. But he said it had nothing to do with the real estate. The reason he bought it was to push his reality. So the reason I take on bigger and bigger projects is not because I want more money, but I want to expand what I think is real for me, what I think is real in my life, and what my reality on the world is. Because if you don't choose your reality, somebody else will hand them their reality on you. They'll lay it on you. Like, oh, if you don't get good grades, you won't be successful. If you want to buy that BS reality, then that's your choice. But it wasn't my choice. So be careful whatever you think is real, because whatever you think is real is your reality. It may not be somebody else's.
So focus every day on choosing your own reality and understanding
what you think is real.
Exactly.
But where you get rich is by expanding what you think is real. See, for me right now, to make $6-7 million a year, it's a walk in the park. But, you know, 15 years ago, to make $6 a year was not that easy. And I was flat broke. But I kept changing my reality of what was possible for me. So now my next reality is $1 million a month.
Right.
Then after that, I'm going to say, now how can I make $50 million a month? It has nothing to do with the money. It has to do with the challenge of changing what I think is real for me.
Right.
That's it.
You know, well, and see, in your ability to actually control your thinking and think in the way that gets you the results that you do, things can happen in your life, I mean, immediately. They
right.
can turn around and...
But if you give in to what you think is real rather than change what you think is real... See, my poor dad gave in to what he thought was, I can't afford that. He never challenged what he thought was real. If you want to get rich, you got to challenge what you think is real.
Right.
Thank you. Very well put.
Thanks.
Perfect. Well, Robert, Jeff, thank you both for being here. Robert, fantastic advice, great philosophies on business and life. It's a real pleasure doing this interview. For the listeners that want to further their education about what you've talked about, which I'm sure all of them do, how could they get more information from you? What would you recommend to them in terms of just getting really knowledgeable on this subject?
Well, my website is www.richdad.com. Just go there, check it out. I have videos and all that stuff. I have what's called a $10 library. You know, it's from advisors that I have, like how to go public. How to find a corporation, you know, tax loopholes, things like this. The point is that I am my team. I put my team on the line. It's not me anymore. You know, my team of advisors, because if you want to get smart, you want to hang out with people much smarter than you.
Yeah.
And my team of advisors are willing to give away as much as they know, because some of them charge me $500 an hour. You can get a $10 tape for them, you know, for 1 hour's tape for $10. You know, it's still perfect stuff. So keep getting educated, and there's a lot of other great sites. And I thank you guys for what you're doing, because education in the B and the I side is probably what this country needs most, because what makes this country rich are people who are willing to build companies and take risks. And that's what makes it strong and great. Thanks. So thank you very much.
Yes,
thank you, Robert, for being here.
Great. And to all the listeners, give me your thoughts on this interview, and I'm sure that you really enjoyed it and got a lot of value out of it. Give me your feedback, and in the future, I will most likely ask Robert to do another interview, because he is a world of knowledge. So until next time, eat your competition alive. Take care.